Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Downtown Juneau's popular marine park will become a construction site for more than a year, starting next week. That's in order for the park to undergo a major multi-million dollar rebuild meant to make the area less congested during the summer tourism season and provide more community gathering spaces. Lauren Varelli is the deputy director of Juneau's Parks and Rec Department. She says the park's reconstruction is expected to start on March 2nd and last through April of 2027.
We're really excited to have a more, open, welcoming gathering space for the community.
Varelli says the goal is to have the rebuild be as non-disruptive as possible. Starting next week, the city will fence off the construction area and put up signs for navigating around it. The city is contracting with Dawson Construction to do the renovation. The building is estimated to cost nearly $10 million and will be paid entirely by fees the city collects from cruise ship tourists that visit Juneau, called marine passenger fees. In 2022, the city solicited a survey that received more than 1,000 responses from residents about what they'd like to see included in the park.
And one of the biggest things that we heard is they want a stage and performance area. So we're very excited about that. It's being built on the water side, so looking towards town. And I hope in the future we'll have more like music in the parks kind of programming for Parks and Recreation. So we'll utilize this space.
In addition to a covered stage and performance area, the renovation would include construction of a new plaza, picnic tables and seating, and a small play area for children. The new marine park will also feature a Northwest Coast formline inlay designed by Tlingit and Athabascan designer Rico Tlanot-Worrell. Varelli says the city is currently working to find temporary locations nearby to relocate vendors that are typically set up in the park, like Bernadette's barbecue stand and Curlo's caldo stand. The construction will have winter and summer routes for pedestrians to follow, and Varelli says there'll be plenty of signage in the area to direct people. Two state lawmakers introduced legislation this month that aims to crack down on water pollution from major ships, including cruises. The Alaska Desk's Avery Elfelt reports.
Senator Jesse Keel and Representative Sarah Hannan, both Democrats from Juneau, each introduced bills that target the types of fuel that ships use in Alaska waters. Put simply, the bills require ships to use fuel with low levels of sulfur. Here's Keel.
There is a growing trend around the world toward requiring the cleaner fuels that don't have as much sulfur and metals and other really problematic stuff in them.
The legislation zeroes in on something called heavy fuel oil, a tar-like fuel that's left over after crude oil is refined. Many ships use it because it's cheap. But heavy fuel oil contains high levels of sulfur and other pollutants that increase the risk of illness when in the air. In Alaska, that sulfur doesn't enter the air. Instead, ships that use heavy fuel oil also use technology called scrubbers, which remove pollutants from their exhaust. On many ships, scrubber systems dilute the resulting material and release it back into the sea.
Whatever they are putting out into the environment, that's in the waters where Alaskans fish, where we clam and crab, where we gather seaweed. So that's where the bill is focused.
Keel's bill says ships may not use fuel that exceeds a certain level of sulfur, while Hannan says ships can't use heavy fuel oil at all. Both provide a few exceptions. For instance, Hannan's bill says ships that are just passing through state waters but are not stopping in ports or entering internal waters are exempt. Hannan did not respond to an interview request. Keel's bill includes a similar exception regarding ships that are just passing through, like those traveling between Asia and the lower 48.
They're spending so little time in Alaska's waters that they have minimal opportunity to have an impact.
Notably, Keel's bill would permit ships to use dirty fuels if they ensure the resulting pollutants do not enter the environment in any way. That's possible if ships use so-called closed-loop scrubbers. Those systems remove the pollutants from ship exhaust, but don't discharge the resulting wash water overboard. Instead, they dispose of it on land.
If ships have a technology on them that keep that stuff out of our air and water, fine. Not a problem for Alaska's environment. But if not, then you need to just not burn it in the first place.
The Senate Resources Committee is set to consider Keel's bill next. Hannan's has been referred to the House Transportation and Finance Committees. The Cruise Lines International Association did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
The Alaska Permanent Fund beat its performance benchmarks last year and is approaching $9 billion. That's according to the investment consulting firm Callahan, which has advised the state on the Permanent Fund's performance for decades and briefed state lawmakers on Wednesday. Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
Speaking to the House and Senate Finance Committees this week, Callahan CEO Greg Allen had high praise for the Permanent Fund's managers.
I'd say it's one of the, in my view, one of the best-run portfolios amongst our clients.
The fund earned 12.5% last year, far in excess of the long-term target of 5% plus inflation. Over the past 10 years, the consultants say the Permanent Fund has performed about on par with peers like large foundations and college endowments, and it's performed better than most large state retirement funds. But over the past 3 years, the Permanent Fund's return has lagged behind its peers. That's due in part to the fact that the fund has more bonds and less stock than some other funds, making it more stable and less risky. And Callahan VP Steve Center says that when you adjust for that risk, the Permanent Fund looks like it's doing a better job extracting returns than most similar funds.
The investment team is taking measured risks that are paying off well compared to the other peers in this peer group.
The fund has a very diverse portfolio. It's not just stocks and bonds. Alaskans also collectively hold billions in real estate, hedge funds, shares in private companies, and non-bank lending, known as private credit. Those last two categories, private equity and private credit, give the fund a chance to capitalize on opportunities that, as a whole, perform better than their equivalents on the public market. The performance consultants also addressed a common question from lawmakers and the public. Why doesn't the fund just invest in a low-cost index fund like the S&P 500? Lawmakers across the political spectrum have floated the idea in recent years as a way to cut management costs as the stock market has soared to record highs. But Allen says that would be unthinkably irresponsible for an institution like the Permanent Fund. For one thing, about a third of the S&P 500's value comes from seven closely related tech stocks, the so-called Magnificent Seven.
So call that $30 billion in seven stocks. That's what you would have if you're invested in the S&P 500. There's no planet on which that's considered diversified in the institutional investment world. And you'd be subject to massive criticism when the piper has to be paid and the entire portfolio goes down 40%.
And he says that is not theoretical. That's what happened in the wake of the 2008 global financial crisis. He says the fund's diversified portfolio means it'll never do as well as the best performing assets. But it also means all the state's eggs aren't in one basket. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And Alaska cyclists deal with cold and dark in the winter, and sometimes snow, ice, wind, rain, you name it. But some still manage to bike to work every day, even in winter. Who does that? Well, as it turns out, Alaska Public Media's very own Casey Grove bikes to work every day. But how can you convince yourself to give it a go? That's a question Casey set out to answer for our Alaska Survival Kit series.
When I heard Tony Lavario, who works at Alaska Air Cargo, does a daily bike commute about twice as long as mine, I had to check it out. But here's the thing. Tony starts his ride at 6:20 every weekday morning. It was a little earlier than that that we sat down to chat quietly while his fish tank bubbled and his wife and four kids slept.
At this point in the day, do you ever have to like convince yourself to bike to work? Is it hard or no?
Be brutally honest, yeah, sometimes, you know, especially when the weather's, you know, awful. But, you know, you make a commitment, you know, you have it set in your mind that, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and do this. And you know, especially Mondays, you know, Mondays are always tough.
That part about making it a commitment, it's important. And that's our first key point. Tony wanted to get more exercise for health reasons. Plus, his daughter's car broke down, so he started letting her drive his. She eventually replaced her car, but by then, Tony's daily bike commute had become a habit. He was committed. Outside, Tony lifts open his garage door to get his bike, always pointed out and ready to go. And pretty soon, we're on our way.
You know, ride to work is always the worst trail, and the best trail is the one coming home.
Tony also eliminates his car from the equation. It's often buried in snow, and his family's cars are always blocking it in. That's our second important point. Make biking the easiest option. It's something Nancy Fresco pointed to. Nancy researches climate change at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, but she's talking to me as an expert on daily winter bike commuting. And she ought to know, Nancy's been a daily bike commuter for 26 years, in a place that saw its second longest stretch of sub-zero days ever this winter, including 11 straight days colder than 40 below. But she makes winter bike commuting easy by investing in really warm clothes.
Because if you don't have the right gear and you're not comfortable and you're getting hot or cold or wet, then that makes the biking feel undesirable and it makes it a difficult choice. Whereas if you do have all of that lined out, it makes it the easy and lazy choice.
Not everybody lives close enough to work to bike commute every day, nor can everyone afford the bike and the gear. So that brings up a third important thing to remember. If you want a bike to work, but you can't do it every day, start out small and don't beat yourself up over it. Try 1 or 2 days a week. There's a fourth really simple thing that can help a lot. Make it fun. Sometimes I'll race to catch up to other people on the trail, riders who have no idea I'm treating it like the end of a stage in the Tour de France. I also track my rides on Strava. A couple years ago, there was a piece of trail near work that my neighbor and I were battling over, vying to be what the app calls the local legend. It caused me to bike an extra couple of miles every day and has become a way of turning an overly familiar bike ride into a sort of game. Then there are the little things. Back on the ride with Tony, we're almost to his work. He tells me he used to ride with headphones on, but then he forgot to charge them one day.
Riding in the snow, and it's just something about the crunching that is just like, that sounds so good. So satisfying. It's like riding on bubble wrap.
I'd have to agree. It's the sights and the sounds that help make the daily ride more fun. In Anchorage, I'm Casey Grove.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 20 degrees and we're getting a little bit of snow. The low tonight looks like it won't get much colder. It actually says 21 degrees. But there is a winter storm warning in effect from tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., until tomorrow night at about 11 p.m. The National Weather Service says heavy snow is expected, with total snow accumulations of 6 to 12 inches possible in Juneau. And sunset is at 5:24 p.m. today. Sunrise will be just before 7 a.m. tomorrow. And we have another week or so before daylight savings starts on March 8th. That means we'll set our clocks forward an hour and have a little bit more daylight at the end of the day. This is KTOO.